This is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. It's a violation of federal laws that limit administrative subpoenas to administrative matters. And that's not what Rodney Scott did. And I think what was most damning in the Senate hearing last month was that Mr. Scott said not only that he had authorized an administrative subpoena in the course of a criminal homicide investigation that he had no business being a part of, but that this was common practice and is common practice. So, you know, the way we see it is a person who cannot recognize abuse of power or participated in abuse of power is not a person who should hold power.
And we will see what happens. Again, the confirmation hearing has been held, but Rodney Scott has not yet been confirmed by the full Senate to be head of Border and Customs Patrol. That does it for our show. Andrea Guerrera, we thank you so much for being with us, Executive Director of the San Diego Alliance. You can visit democracynow.org to see all the coverage we've done on the death of Anastasio Hernandez Rojas. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland holds its first citywide budget hearing on the mayor's budget.
Two cities in the West adopt pride flags as official city flags.
And Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield helps block Trump's cuts to libraries.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 7th, 2025. I'm Catherine.
And I'm Sherry Meredith. Today is the first citywide public hearing on Portland's proposed budget. Public comment started this afternoon at 4 p.m. and goes on to 6:30. Portland is facing a major shortfall in its general fund, which funds things like parks, homeless services, and fire departments and police. Mayor Keith Wilson released his budget last week, which slashes park maintenance and permitting department and relies on county and state funds to help fill in the gaps. Here's an excerpt of his remarks to the council earlier today.
My proposed FY25-26 budget is balanced, forward-looking, and a clear reaffirmation of our city's values and priorities. Again and again, Portlanders have demonstrated undaunted faith and optimism that our city should lead on public safety, compassion for our most vulnerable, equity for the marginalized, and environmental stewardship. Our final budget must reflect these values. I've released my first city budget proposal into a challenging environment defined by national uncertainty and a financial gap widened by expiring one-time funds, slipping regional economic competitiveness, slowing property tax revenues, and the staggering cost of the humanitarian crisis on our streets. I've explored every avenue to blunt the impact of the coming budget reductions. I've sought out external funding, drawn forward unspent and one-time funds, and reestablished financial partnerships with state and regional governance. We will minimize layoffs as much as possible and examine reducing external contracts and other spending. We will work with the Bureau of Human Resources to ensure we have career transition support to retain as many employees as possible in new roles in the city as the city services realign regarding city workforce. The city of Portland relies on the grit, the passion, and the know-how of approximately 8,000 employees. Their resilience made a once-in-a-generation realignment of city reorganization possible while simultaneously continuing to provide Portlanders with the services that we expect. We face difficult staffing decisions, a process that is challenging for workers, for their families, and our organizational culture. Like many local governments in the region, the city of Portland will experience layoffs. We will inevitably lose highly experienced individuals who have given much. For those who will be impacted by these layoffs, please know that these decisions are the result of a fiscal situation beyond your control and not a reflection on your capability or contributions, for which we are grateful. In terms of green leadership, green leadership means restoring the original promise of the Portland Clean Energy Fund and not tapping it for an unrelated crisis or using it as a shortcut to hike taxes. Our voters remember the promise made with this fund: a cleaner, greener, more equitable, lower carbon Portland. Revenue. While the long-term financial stability of the city of Portland may require adding, changing, or otherwise exploring revenue increases, my proposed FY 25 and 26 budget will not rely on new taxes. It will, however, include modest proposals to increase in fees for parking, parks, permitting, water, sewer, stormwater utility fees, rideshare fees, and short-term rental fees to bring us in line with peer cities. And as a conclusion, as my first annual budget as the mayor of Portland, I believe we have an opportunity to solidify and expand our gains in public safety, our equity goals, and green leadership, as well as return to proven strategies on unsheltered homelessness. I'm grateful for the role and responsibilities of the City Council as they discuss, they debate, and they ultimately pass our next budget. Together, we will leave a profound impact on the future of our city. I'm grateful for this opportunity to serve in this crucial democratic process on behalf of Portland.
That was an excerpt of Portland Mayor Keith Wilson's remarks about the proposed budget at a council meeting earlier today. The fiscal year ends June 30th, and city councilors will propose amendments to Wilson's budget in the weeks ahead. Portlanders can find more information on Mayor Wilson's budget on the city budget website at portland.gov/CBO.
Public libraries, museums, workers, and minority-owned businesses received a welcome boost today thanks to Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield. Rayfield and 20 other attorneys general were instrumental in stopping the Trump administration through a court order from dismantling three federal agencies. Those agencies are the Institute of Museum and Library Services, the Minority Business Development Agency, and the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service. President Trump's executive order was stopped by a preliminary injunction issued by the United States District Court for the District of Rhode Island, thanks to the Coalition of Attorneys General. Attorney General Rayfield said, quote, "The institutions are a lifeline in communities in Oregon. The court's ruling today is an important step in preventing real harm. Libraries and museums aren't political targets. They educate, preserve, culture, and create opportunity. Cutting off their funding would hurt students, families, and economies across the state," end quote. As Attorney General Rayfield and the coalition asserted in the winning lawsuit, the loss of federal funding would greatly impact local libraries, especially in 15 rural counties, which get assistance from the Oregon State Library. The loss of funding would have also negatively impacted the Oregon Battle of the Books program, an annual competition for students around the state.
As Congress moves to slow the country's transition to electric vehicles, a new American Lung Association air quality report shows pollution levels throughout Washington are often unhealthy, in large part due to tailpipe emissions. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Air pollution in Washington is getting worse, according to a new report citing transportation emissions as the primary culprit. 8 of the 12 Washington counties surveyed received an F grade for particle pollution, including King and Pierce counties. Yakima and Seattle ranked the 8th and 9th worst cities in the country. Transportation emissions account for nearly a quarter of total air pollution and about 40% of Washington's greenhouse gas emissions. Laura Kate Bender with the American Lung Association says more Americans live in polluted areas now than any other time within the last 10 years.
After decades of progress to clean up the air from policies under the Clean Air Act, we're now starting to see an uptick in pollution levels once again. And it shows that we really need to double down on protections that are limiting emissions from vehicles, not roll them back.
Congressional Republicans just voted to rescind the federal waivers that allow California to set emission standards for vehicles that are stricter than national ones, arguing the rules hurt consumers and the trucking industry. The report says this is the seventh straight year of an increasing health threat from particle pollution nationwide. Particulate matter is a mixture of tiny solids or liquid droplets suspended in the air. Those particles that are small enough can lodge deep in the lungs and cause health problems, including cancer and asthma attacks. Bender says smoke from wildfires driven by climate change adds to the problem.
Those conditions are being made worse by changing temperatures. Climate change means more extreme heat, and more extreme heat can lead to more ozone pollution. And those are both results that we're seeing show up in this year's report.
Congressional Republicans are considering revoking the federal tax credit of up to $7,500 for new electric vehicle purchases. The House Infrastructure Committee is also debating new registration fees that would charge people who drive electric cars more than those who drive gas-powered vehicles. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Utah and Idaho passed laws barring the display of non-official flags in public buildings. The laws were seen as aimed particularly at pride flags. Salt Lake City and Boise recently adopted some new official city flags. Salt Lake City Council approved three new city flags, one with the rainbow colors of the pride flag, a second with the pink and blue of the transgender pride flag, and a third commemorating Juneteenth and the end of slavery. The Boise City Council designated the Rainbow Pride flag and a flag promoting organ donation as official city flags. Boise's Mayor Laurent McLean said, quote, "The city of Boise will continue to fly the flags on City Hall Plaza that represent our community and speak to our values of caring for people and welcoming all." A bill in Florida that would have barred flags expressing a political viewpoint failed to advance in the recently concluded legislative session there.
India makes cross-border strikes in Kashmir. The Supreme Court backs transgender military ban, and government actions conflict with indigenous land protections. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. India has launched attacks across the line of control into Pakistan-administered Kashmir. Pakistan reports three deaths, including a child, amid rising tensions between the nuclear powers after a deadly militant attack in Kashmir that targeted Hindus 2 weeks ago. The U.S. is ending its bombing campaign against the Houthis in Yemen. It's not clear if the Houthis will stop their attacks on shipping. Clean energy activists and veterans say rolling back federal renewable investments undermines national security. Environmental advocate Yatide Badaki warns that moves to undo the Inflation Reduction Act will increase dependence on dangerous regimes. And she says the rollback violates Congress's right to set spending.
The Inflation Reduction Act and environmental regulations are being besieged by a president who believes that his every want should magically become the law of the land. That is not how the Constitution works.
The IRA has led an estimated $44 billion in clean tech investments at almost 1,000 sites across the country. But the Trump administration aims to increase oil and gas drilling on public land while limiting states' ability to set environmental policy. State Representative and veteran Debbie Serignana says lawmakers allied to fossil fuel interests in New Mexico often prioritize profits over public health.
The hardest part of being a legislator is watching on this committee where they don't do anything. They don't say anything. They don't see it as wrong because money is the most important thing about the Permian Basin.
Crystal C. Baring with the Northern Arapaho tribe is praising Wyoming for imposing new penalties for vandalizing indigenous rock art. But she says tribes are concerned that the U.S. Interior Department slashed the comment period on energy projects.
Our sacred sites and our places of significance, that's our history on the ground. It's not in books, it's on the land. So it's really important for tribes to have that voice in there to protect those sites.
The Supreme Court is letting the administration ban transgender people from serving openly in the military, drawing backlash from civil rights groups. Justices also heard arguments on emergency immigration powers, which could further expand presidential authority. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on how Trump's deep cuts to USAID are impacting HIV/AIDS and harm reduction services in South Africa. At 6, it's Alternative Radio, then at 7, The Global Sale with TK Kapura. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 49 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be partly sunny with a high of 68. Today in history, in 1994, Edvard Munch's painting, The Scream, is recovered unharmed after an art heist at a museum in Oslo stole it 3 months earlier. The quote of the day is from French moralist Joseph Joubert, who wrote, quote, "When you go in search of honey, you must expect to be stung by bees."
The leader of the Native Land Institute voices his concerns about Trump initiatives on land conservation. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An advocate for protecting Native American lands says he's concerned about some Trump administration initiatives. Chuck Kornbach of Station WUWM reports.
Keegan King is a member of the Pueblo of Acoma tribe and founder and CEO of the Native Land Institute based in New Mexico. At a recent forum organized by the Society of Environmental Journalists, King told reporters that he's worried about President Trump trying to fast-track development of energy production on public lands, including parts of the sacred Chaco Culture Natural Historical Park in northwestern New Mexico. King says tribal leaders are gearing up for a long battle.
It's going to drain a lot of resources over the next 4 years. So tribes, tribal leadership are already trying to look into legal defense funds, looking at potential public land sell-offs and what that means for adjacent public lands to reservation communities.
Trump talks of unleashing American energy and argues some development restrictions drive up energy costs and weaken national security. Keegan King says he's also worried about the status of some national monuments. The Biden administration with Interior Secretary Deb Haaland expanded co-management with tribes. King urges white-led conservation groups to partner with more indigenous ones to protect various sites, in some cases letting the tribes lead the strategy.
All of these public lands, all of the places that we care about, that we love, that you write about, are indigenous lands at one point. And many of our tribes still go there for prayer and pilgrimage and also to recreate, to hunt, to fish like every other American.
The latest Trump federal budget proposal would reduce money for national parks, monuments, and historic sites by nearly 25% and turn some of those properties over to states. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
Lawmakers have moved to ban the internment of human remains at Bear Butte State Park in South Dakota. This ruling includes the spreading of ashes at the site. The ban was previously instituted more than 20 years ago, before being unceremoniously repealed in 2019. Bear Butte, or Mato Paha, is considered a sacred site to indigenous people, and the ban was first put in place after consultation with tribal leaders. For those spiritual reasons, visitors are encouraged to respect the area before hiking. The mountain stands alone from Black Hills proper near Sturgis, and the peak is about 4,500 feet above sea level. A South Dakota clinic that serves Native Americans is hanging indigenous art on its walls as a healing tool. Rachel Olivia Berg is one of the artists. She's created artwork for companies and places such as hotel lobbies and jumped at the chance to provide art at the Oyate Health Center in Rapid City after it put out a request.
What's really nice about Oyate is art from our perspective, things we understand, things we relate to, and it helps you feel like it's your space.
The clinic-wide permanent collection includes more than 100 works of art spread throughout the center. The pieces focus on culture-specific healing made by 50-some tribal citizens from the Great Plains area. Officials say having indigenous art throughout the campus has transformed the space and what it means to heal inside it. Here's Ashley Poyer, selection committee member and art museum curator.
Native people dissect that word healing to being more of a spiritual health as well as a physical and mental health.
The collection includes photography, paintings, and 3D work. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has changed his plans to balance the federal budget through large cuts in Medicaid. Several Republican Congress reps are worried that public opposition to the cuts would hurt their chances of re-election, but cuts to environmental protections aren't seen as threatening a similar voter backlash. Included in the bill passed by the House Natural Resources Committee are major drilling lease sales in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and Cook Inlet, as well as elimination of most oversight and public input on these operations. These lease sales bring in only pennies on the dollar for what the extraction companies get, and have little effect on oil and gas prices. The bill would also increase timber harvest on federal lands by 25%, including Alaska's Tongass National Forest, and slashes overall funding for federal land management. Carol Hawley of Earth Justice's Alaska office said, quote, "This bill, if passed without drastic changes, would make things worse by doubling down on reckless oil and gas extraction in the Arctic, maximizing mining and logging on lands valued by the public for recreation and subsistence activities, and halting clean energy projects."
Elected officials who also are veterans, including New Mexico Rep. Debbie Serignana, an Air Force veteran, urged the White House to restore environmental regulations and continue federal climate investments for health, equity, and national security during a summit on Tuesday. Roz Brown has the story.
A bipartisan group of current and former elected officials say the continued use of fossil fuels threatens global security, and they want funding for climate investments restored. New Mexico State Representative and Air Force veteran Debbie Serignana is a member of the bipartisan group Elected Officials to Protect America. At a Tuesday summit, she emphasized the importance of provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure law. Serignana cited the 161 pump jacks located within a mile of an elementary school adjacent to the oil-producing Permian Basin, exposing kids to cancer-causing chemicals.
The hardest part of being a legislator is watching on this committee where they have the representatives from their districts sitting there, and they don't do anything. They don't say anything. They don't see it as wrong because money is the most important thing about the Permian Basin.
Since taking office, President Donald Trump has asserted that fossil fuels are better for energy security. The Biden administration's IRA and BIL laws aim to invest in domestic energy production while promoting clean energy and represent the federal government's biggest climate investments in history. Serignana says it can be a challenge to advocate for clean alternatives because New Mexico derives a significant portion of its revenues from fossil fuels. At the same time, the state's clean energy portfolio includes solar, geothermal, and wind, with the state ranked 7th in the nation in wind generation. She says funding for almost 1,000 state projects, everything from transportation to agriculture and wildfires, is at risk.
All these provisions and funding from the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure law and environmental regulations must be restored for the future of our people, for their prosperity, health, and security.
An executive order by President Trump on April 8th instructed the Department of Justice to eliminate the independent constitutional authority of every state to govern its own climate laws. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
President Donald Trump has considered taxing millionaires to pay for administration priorities. A new report shows that increasing top tax rates to 44% would raise enough revenue to pay for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, Children's Health Insurance Program, and temporary assistance for needy families. Eric Galatas has more.
Reports that the Trump administration has considered taxing wealthy Americans to pay for mass deportations and other priorities comes on the heels of a new study showing how the move could generate significant revenues without slowing economic growth. American University's Mary Hansen says raising tax rates for people who earn over $609,000 a year to 44% would add 3% to the nation's tax coffers, enough to stave off cuts to popular programs serving low-income Coloradans.
Current budget proportions, that's about enough to pay for some of the biggest, most important programs like food stamps, SNAP, Children's Health Insurance Program, and also temporary assistance for needy families.
While 44% may seem high compared to today's top rate of 37%, it's a lot less than the 92% paid by people who earned over $400,000 a year under Republican President Dwight D. Eisenhower. Republicans have long argued that tax cuts create economic benefits for all, and leaders in Congress, including House Speaker Mike Johnson, have said they would oppose any tax hikes. Hansen says raising the top tax rate would also increase how much of the national income pie that most Americans get to keep compared to how much the wealthiest get by about 2%. She adds years of trickle-down economics have shown that only the wealthy benefit from low tax rates.
If lowering top tax rates was gonna trickle down, then you and I would be much richer than we are now because we've had an era of low top tax rates for decades.
Hansen says higher personal tax rates have virtually no impact on long-term economic growth, and that lower personal tax rates lead to less economic growth because people tend to take advantage of the lower rate by moving their income.
Instead of reinvesting it in your business where it will grow your business and grow the economy, you'll be more likely to just take it as personal income, which is not going to stimulate growth.
This is Eric Galatas for the Colorado News Connection.
Some 13 million U.S. adults live too far away to commute to the nearest four-year university. This problem has been getting worse. As private and public colleges have been closing, especially in rural areas, about half of the U.S. states have looked at the problem and allow community colleges to offer four-year bachelor's degrees. Three-quarters of community college students in Illinois said they would pursue bachelor's degrees if they could do it on the same campus, according to a survey released by the governor's office. Kentucky's legislature is considering converting one technical and community college into four-year institutions, and some Wyoming community colleges have added a limited number of bachelor's degrees. In general, distance has been a huge obstacle for students. Many do not have a public university available within an hour's travel. Affordability is also a big issue. Fewer than 25% of rural Americans hold bachelor's degrees or higher, compared with the national average of 33%. And the gap is getting wider. In those states where community colleges already offer bachelor's degrees, they're often limited to certain high-demand fields such as teaching and nursing. In addition, there's often significant opposition from four-year institutions, which are themselves desperate for more students. Hurting everyone is the fact the number of 18-year-olds in the U.S. is falling dramatically. It'll be down 15% by 2039 versus today, in what enrollment managers have named the demographic cliff.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael didn't know Trump could make things this terrible this quickly.
Donnie said he didn't know if the president needed to uphold the Constitution, as if his oath of office was just another script. Finally something he doesn't know. And maybe he decided to not run for a third term because he realized the Constitution said no. But more than likely he's getting fed up with courts, Democrats, and others telling him no, obstructing America's greatness. But hey, even stable geniuses aren't perfect. He knows world politics and economics are just another poker game. But I worry about his bluff being called, the bluff being that what he knows is actually true. Unlike The Apprentice, there's no agreed-upon script. Every country is their own show, as every multi-billionaire is their own country. Maybe Netanyahu doesn't know Palestinians are human beings. Maybe he doesn't know Israel is doing to Palestinians what Germans did to Jews and others. When Trump dies from bad diet, conflicting prescriptions, and uncontrollable impulses, his tombstone should read, "I didn't know." For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 7th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Josh Salem, Anna Wilcox, and Dave Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonio Gonzalez, Eric Galatis, Isabel Charlet, Roz Brown, and Farah Siddiqui. The director for the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast for this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sherry Meredith.
And I'm Catherine. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.